If you have ever wondered how golf can change someone's life, our high-profile special guest today on Musings on Golf will tell you exactly why that has been the case for him. Along with our esteemed executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to another episode of our show. You know, folks, from the start, when Bob Bupka and I launched Musings on Golf, we did so with the goal of having guests who are fabulous storytellers. Well, I can tell you, in the great Michael Wilbon of ESPN, who you will hear from shortly, we continue to achieve that goal. Except in Mike's case, he far exceeds it. Yes, he is the one who openly admits that golf has changed his life. Didn't take up the game until he was 37. But man, oh man, once he did he ever? And you'll learn why Mike took the plunge into golf. You know, where it's taken him, how his son is now crushing it by the old man, and how Mr. Wilbon simply cannot get enough of watching both the best women and men golfers on TV. Mike also talks about coming up on the start of his 25th season as co-host of the immensely popular Pardon the Interruption show on ESPN with another golfaholic in Tony Kornheiser. After the interview with Michael Wilbon, we'll hear from Chris Goddard, who continued his remarkable play by capturing the season-opening PGA Tour stop at the Sony Open in Hawaii. We'll also give you a few statistics about Vijay Singh, who at age 62 made the cut at the Sony Open. Just remarkable stuff from Vijay. We'll also give you good news about a six-time major champion now back home after some important medical work that was done. And we'll promote our show for next week with another guest. Certainly, you will recognize the last name. Right now, messages from our wonderful corporate partners at William & Harry, the Friars Club, and Titleist, and then on to hearing great stories from Michael Wilbon. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here so every fan can feel like part Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% waterproof with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Limited run, don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Golf is more than your scorecard, the brand of clubs you play, or the clothes you wear. Golf is a journey where every round is a memory, filled with friends old and new. The Friars Golf Club is where those lifelong friendships are made, on the first tee, in the 19th hole, and far beyond. Exclusive trips, unforgettable rounds, and the very best people. Indeed, great courses are simply better with great company. So join the Friars today. To learn more, email us at info@thefriars.com and put the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. So we invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience at the Friars Golf Club. Our special guest today is one of the nation's most respected sports journalists for more than 45 years. He has reported on the biggest events in sports and the biggest names who play them. And next season, he will celebrate 25 years as co-host of the immensely popular Pardon the Interruption daily TV show on ESPN. He also has a great passion for the game of golf, which he has played well and often, and certainly reported on extensively. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to cover, and what an absolute thrill it is to welcome to Musings on Golf the pride of Chicago, Illinois, Michael Wilbon of ESPN. Hey, Mike, really appreciate you joining us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I know the pride of Chicago right now would have to be something to do with the Bears and not anything else the way they're going.
Mike, we're recording this on the 15th of January, so it's a few days before the game that will clearly be a very frigid game at Soldier Field against the Rams. And then we won't post this until after the game. So we don't know who wins. But I went through this last year in such a good way with the Commanders where everything fell right. They made it all the way to the NFC Championship game. You're dealing with that in Chicago. Mike, give a sense of the pride, of the joy of being able to follow your team when you have a magical season like this.
Well, the joy, Kelly, as you said, the joy is what is completely unexpected. I think even more unexpected than the Commanders' run was last year, and they're similar, and each team was involved in the other's run as a victim.
Yes.
But, you know, this year, I'm going to be at that game. I was at the Packers-Bears game, the middle one, and I'm going to be at Bears-Rams on a frigid Sunday night coming up. Yeah. And it's the way these games have unfolded. There's no possible way they can win seven times trailing in the fourth quarter, usually in the last 2 minutes. And you look, I'm old enough now to have seen all my teams win, Bears, Bulls many times over, Blackhawks many times over, three times, and Cubs. But this Bears team is just so the joy that has come along with it because nobody's expecting it. Nobody started the season thinking the Bears were, maybe you were pushing it by suggesting they could make the playoffs. You certainly weren't suggesting this.
Like, it's also always amazing what it does for a community.
Yes.
Isn't it amazing? It's just how it lifts the spirits. It lifts the commonality of who you are as, in this case, as Chicagoans.
Well, you would think a city that big has enough identities where it's not going to latch on to a team and treat it like a college town. That would be the wrong presumption. I mean, people are crazy. Walking around town, looking at each other, saying "bear down." We've had some big stars. We had Michael Jordan, of course, winning six championships, and we've had Walter Payton, and we've had big stars throughout. You know, Patrick Kane when he was winning three Stanley Cup championships, but this is different. There's no stars on this team. Not like that. There's not one all-pro, it may be a lineman or two. But this is, people are latching on to it, I think, because it is so unexpected and because it doesn't have the stars. It's a real underdog team. And we're acting like we're Akron, Ohio instead of Chicago.
I love it. Michael Wilbon joining us here on Musings on Golf. And Mike, we'll get to golf in a minute. That's the primary reason that you joined us. But at the outset, I mentioned about you coming up on your 25th year, you and Tony Kornheiser with PTI. 25 years, Mike. Pioneering show in so many ways as the two of you debate, discuss the top stories of the day. In your opinion, why has your show with Tony, it's not just been a one-hit wonder, a two-year wonder, why over 25 years does it continue to be so incredibly successful?
Well, first, thank you. And secondly, I think the difference is it's a relationship show. And people don't know what that means unless you're of a certain age. It's funny. I will sit at home some nights and I'm surfing old television. And when I say old, I mean 60s and 70s. And I'll run across the Odd Couple, with Tony Randall and Jack Klugman, Felix and Oscar. And that's what makes the show. It's a relationship show. And I've had the late, great Kobe Bryant said that to me when the show was in about its fifth or sixth year. And he knew us as sports writers. And then he volunteered stuff. And I said, okay, I'm going to make you a producer. Tomorrow after the game, I want you to tell me what you would do differently. We'd get into stuff when you knew that Kobe had a career in entertainment. you know, bless his soul, if he had been with us that long, he had one anyway, he won an Oscar. But he talked about the show being a relationship show and why that set it apart from other sports shows. And of course, he was right. Because Tony and I, we don't disagree as much as people think we do or want us to. We often agree. We're just loud getting there or cantankerous getting there. So I think it's that. And I think it's also that we don't, we talk about everything. And I think there's a certain number of people who want shows to go beyond the NBA and the NFL. We talk about the Olympics because God knows both of us covered enough Olympics. We talk about golf.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about golf. We don't care what other shows on the network do. And so I think there's those little things add up to something that people watch for different reasons than they might watch other shows.
Yeah, and that relationship that. You and Tony preceded that. I being a Washingtonian, heck, I can still see you, you know, gathered around with the late great George Michael, Sonny Jurgensen, you and Tony and others talking about kind of similar to what you and Tony talk about every day and knocking opinions around and listening and it was great fun back then.
Well, thank you. It was at the Washington Post where Tony and I met each other. In the summer of 1979, let's not do the math. And you're right, it was local. And so, but the people of that day locally were enormous Hall of Famers like Sonny Jurgensen, like John Riggins. Into that mix just before us a few years was Joe Theismann.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one team, but Wes Unseld and John Thompson. You know, when Georgetown was coming along and a major, major story for different reasons in sports nationally. And yeah, it was very cozy and very local. And then somebody said, Mark Shapiro said, I'm going to put this on television one day. We're like, yeah, right. So little did we know.
Little did you know how long it would last and continues to. Okay, so let's get on to golf. Mike, how'd you get started in playing the game and I wonder, did the golf bug, did you enjoy it right away and say, man, I got to play more of this. I got to learn the game more and more, et cetera.
Almost right away. Golf was not on the menu when I was growing up on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody who played it. I never watched it. I didn't consume it. It's crazy enough, I had an uncle, my father's brother. When he was 50 years old, he got in a car on the south side. And he said, I'm going to drive to San Diego. I just bought a set of golf clubs. I'm going to drive to San Diego. I'm going to live there the rest of my life and play golf every single day, which he did until 94. But we didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't get it from him. And so I got it because I played everything else growing up. In fact, that was at a time where everyone played everything growing up. There was no AAU for summer ball. You went to the next sport and the next sport and the next sport. But golf was the only one we didn't go to. But when I was starting to write a column and Tiger Woods was, you know, he was in that bridge time where Michael was retiring and then retiring again. And Tiger was becoming the most important athlete. Maybe sharing it with Kobe, maybe, on the face of the earth. And I just knew, unless I followed golf, unless I knew what it felt like to pick up a club, I was not going to be able to write a credible column in the Washington Post in a huge golf community. I mean, we're not Florida. We're not Scottsdale, where I also spend some time. But Washington, D.C., as you know, having grown up here with a dad involved as heavily in the industry as he was, you know, Washington's a big golf place. And I just couldn't write a credible column unless I understood more. So I set out to play a little and to understand. And yes, immediately or almost there, almost immediately, I was completely nuts. And clubs in the car, driving range every day, lessons. I went from then playing 70 rounds of golf a year, maybe 80 rounds of golf a year. Now I've had to come back off that. Real life got in the way. But yeah, I got it bad. It's because of Tiger.
Yeah.
And Tiger knew that later on and invited me to play in things here at Congressional at his media day and out in California. And I didn't ever want to play. One day, Charles Barkley and I are with Tiger and Roy Green. The four of us are together in Scottsdale. And Tiger, we were going to play. I'm like, that can't be any fun for you. Let's just skip that. And he said, I'll never forget, he goes, okay, as long as you said let's skip it, let's do something I want to do on Sunday I never get a chance to do, and you guys can do it every week. And I said, what's that? And he goes, watch football at Charles's house. Let's go. We can do that.
Yeah.
So we did that for about, you know, the requisite 9 hours. And I was breathing a sigh of relief that I didn't have to stand out there and make swings with Tiger. It can't be any fun. It can't be any fun for pros. I know they have to play pro-ams. I get it. But it can't be any fun. I don't care what they say. I've talked to Phil Mickelson about this too. Yeah. And I got at 37 years old, I picked up a golf club for the first time. And, you know, now 30 years later, I got a 17-year-old who's sitting past me, distances I don't want to discuss. And it's part of my life, and I can't imagine my life without it.
Yeah, right. It becomes very much part of the DNA of what you do and what you think about, right?
Where I live. I mean, I don't know that I'd live in North Scottsdale. I live on Whisper Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I would do that if it wasn't for golf, because I early on, there was some trip to Scottsdale. It's like, this is heaven. This is nirvana. I got to live here at least part of the time. And so, yeah, I do. And play at Desert Mountain and play at Scottsdale National. One of the great joys of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, great joys of my life.
Sure.
To be able to, and you appreciate it more when you don't start until you're in your mid to late 30s. You appreciate it more. And I love it and don't know what I would do without it.
Well, and part of that, it enables you to have the opportunity to be invited to play golf with the President of the United States, with President Obama. I mean, here's this kid growing up in the south side of Chicago, doesn't take up the game till his late 30s. How did that happen? How did it come to be that the president invited you? And what was it like? It's one thing to play with Tiger Woods, maybe. What's it like playing with a president?
Well, we have some history before, Chicago-based history.
Yeah.
I grew up in the neighborhood not too far, probably a 25-minute walk, but a, you know, 15-minute bike ride and a 5-minute car ride from Mrs. Obama, from Michelle and her brother, who we played, my brother and I played basketball against. And he obviously has been in the basketball industry a long time as a coach and businessman and other things. And so, you know, the president knew, we knew each other's sporting proclivities. We don't share baseball because he's a White Sox guy. His wife, the first lady, has the good sense to be a Cub fan, a Southside Cub fan. The president is a White Sox fan, and he and I go at it about that. But we do share the Bulls and Bears. And we talk about all these things and golf. And so that was his release. That was his moment away. Not as much golf as others who inhabited the White House, not nearly as much, but, you know, he loved it. And it was clear he was going to be good. And he couldn't both practice and play then. He'd just have to come out and play.
Yeah.
And you could see he was going to be good. I don't have it in here. I have a flag for 18 in Army Navy signed by the president after he had to hand me $11. And I think that might have been the last time I got in his pocket. But it was just wonderful to talk about sports with someone who, okay, so if people think that, and President Obama is not the only former president who was a sports, I mean, enriched sports lunatic. If people think that, you know, I don't know President Clinton nearly as well, but I know there were certain things he paid more attention to, a lot of college football, a lot of things, golf. If people think the Bush, my God, both, the whole Bush family, deeply up to here in sports. and can talk about all of it all the time. And so, you know, President Obama, the same thing. I mean, we could go at it about Chicago sports for hours, and sometimes we did. But it was just great as an honor. It's an honor like I'll never have to be able to have that time and play golf and talk about just any and everything under the sun, including our golf games. And now I can't, you know, he'd kill me. I'd be asking for strokes. I'd be begging for strokes. He got to be good. And he probably don't want anybody telling his handicap. I bet he's a 7 or 8. Maybe he's down to a 6. But, you know, I used to beat him when we were both, you know, 11s or something, but not anymore.
Mike Annika Sorenstam was our guest on Musings on Golf last week. And we, you know, we talked about a lot of things. And we talked about her tournament, her Annika event that Caitlin Clark has played in the last couple of years. And I know you're a big proponent of women's golf. And it's pretty cool, Mike, to see someone as popular in her sport through her days at Iowa and now in the WNBA being a part of the women's golf scene. It can only be good for women's golf, Mike.
Great for women's golf. And there's so many athletes, women who, just like the male athletes who, particularly in basketball, I always say particularly point guards and quarterbacks, who become so obsessed with it and so good at it later. And it's no, you know, it's no surprise that she's that interested. And so are other Hall of Fame, like Diana Taurasi, speaking of people in Arizona, who I certainly like to play a round of golf with sooner than later. And there's so many people. And I feel very fortunate in that covering golf and being around it. I got to be around people and who, Michelle Wee, who is, people said, okay, who are your favorite golfers? Michelle Wee is certainly one of them. They can call her retired if they want. I'm not going to call her retired. She's still Michelle Wee. And so that is, I get a charge out of that. And so there, there are women, my teacher, Tanya Tare, who people will recognize from the trick golf circuitry and social media and all of that. Tanya's had to put up with me for years now. And I watch as much women's golf as I do men's golf.
Huh.
And I'm angry when it's not live on the weekends and they got something else on and I'm missing the final round of something that's tape delayed. And I have said to Michelle, who is screaming about this? I've said to Mel Reed, who I adore, who is screaming about this? To Lydia Ko, women who are just great competitors, great athletes, brilliant people who understand what their sport is sometimes up against.
Yeah.
And so I feel very fortunate to share that and being able to communicate that with them.
Hey, Mike, is part of the reason you watch as much of the women's game as the men's game, is it more relatable to your game that they simply hit shots that you and I are much more in common with than 320 yards off the tee?
I learn much more every time. Yeah. And that's why when Tanya, we played around together and I said, you could be stuck with me for a while. Well, that's like 8 years ago. And at one point when I'm transitioning from being able to hit, you know, hit the ball reasonable distances to old man golf, I said, I got to start playing old man golf. And she said, okay, these are 4 wedges. Let's go. Huh. And we're going to take this from the other end of what you've been doing, where you can still shoot some decent scores and do this. And I remember thinking, oh my God, it's so much more relatable that Tanya taught me wedge life as opposed to guys, what we're talking about now. It's not just, there's some physical differences if we look at miles per hour and trajectory. And yes, you can get into that if you want to, but the swing is more relatable, I find. And I found that before I started with Tanya. And so I watch it religiously now, not just the majors, but week to week. And can't wait for their season to get started.
Well, we are so pleased to be joined by the great Michael Wilbon here on Musings on Golf. You can follow Mike on Instagram at Real Mike Wilbon. That also happens to be his handle on X and on his fan Facebook page. Mike, you talked early on about relationships with the relationship you have with Tony, and golf is interesting in that the closeness that you have in covering core players and as opposed to teams and many players on a team. I'm wondering if you might have our show is very much founded on good storytelling. Is there an interview or interviews that you've done with a tour player that stands out for whatever reason? And it could be good or bad, that kind of ties in with that relationship theme. Kind of, that's the A part. The second part, are there particular players that you pull for, even though you've got the journalistic hat on?
Yeah, I don't have the journalistic hat on as much anymore. Yes, I have favorite players.
Yeah.
And, you know, it started out, I mentioned, I like a lot of people, I started playing golf because of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, sure.
I watched Tiger obsessively his whole career, every minute of it, and rooted for him in a way that is not logical. The three athletes who define my life as a viewer, a storyteller, they're Muhammad Ali, even though he retired when I was coming into the business at 21.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan and Tiger.
Yeah.
Those are the people that shape what I do, what I believe in competitively, what I believe in terms of sports. And it's not, I don't separate the sports as much as you might think. I find the similarities to be greater. I find the similarity in not necessarily golfers telling a story, but maybe Cal Ripken, who I got to stand around with at the batting cage covering the Orioles for the Washington Post, and fill in the blank with, you know, I was at Olympia Fields where I'm a member in suburban Chicago, and I got to meet Jack Nicklaus one day relatively recently.
Yeah.
And just sit around, just being around Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
And Barbara Nicklaus, which was so great. It was just, it's an honor. I don't use the word lightly. Because the greatest competitors or participants in anything, they tend to be great storytellers.
Yes.
They tend to be. Maybe not always. God knows I've edited two books with Charles Barkley, one of the greatest storytellers ever of all time. And half of Charles' stories have nothing to do with basketball. As many of them may have to do with golf.
Yeah.
Which we share. And just being, you know, Steve Sands is a good friend, and being able to be on the driving range with Pat Perez. I mean, I find myself, because of my own weekend hacking, in some pretty impressive places. And in those places, you run into real pros. And they can be teaching pros. They can be PGA Tour guys. And in terms of who I root for, I root for Colin Morikawa. I root for John Rahm. I root for, I'm not sitting here with a list. That's probably the start of it. And Rahm is a neighbor in Scottsdale. Tony Finau, another neighbor in Scottsdale, who I root for just as a person that I've gotten to know. And Colin, and there are quite a few people that I root for. I don't know that there's any pattern. You know, I don't know that there's a pattern. You, because you like their swing, because you like the way they answered questions in the post game with my dear friend Amanda Baleone, speaking of people in the golf community,
yeah,
who make a living in it, who I'm jealous of some weeks. So I think all of it just combines, and I'm lucky enough to have a foot or just toes in that world, because there's not as much interviewing. I covered some golf in the early 2000s when I first started playing. I was at Valhalla for the Tiger Bob May, extravaganza. It's one of the great things I've ever covered. I was at Medina for Ryder Cup. I've been lucky enough to be at some places where some major, major events broke out. And I'm happy to have gotten to be there for first the Washington Post. I was here. I was at Medina for the PGA with Tiger and Sergio, and then ESPN. But those, it's just toes in the water. It's not like the basketball and football I got in the cover were those were the main, those were my meal ticket for years. I've gotten to do this, and now is just fun. The journalistic hat is tossed aside, and I just want to go and hang out and watch.
Mike, it's a to say the least, a fascinating time in the elite world of professional golf as the 2026 PGA Tour season kicks off. You've got Brooks Koepka, who has left LIV Golf, and one would have thought, Mike Wilbon, that it would have been several months, et cetera, before he might have come back on the tour. But no, he is. He'll be rejoining at the Farmers later in January, and with a heavy financial price to pay, and he's doing it. Same time, Cameron Smith, John Rahm, and Bryson have all said we're sticking or we're hanging in there with LIV Golf. What's your feel about that, Mike Wilbon, right now of where the PGA Tour and LIV Golf are in, I think, what are we now, year four into this?
Yeah, I do have one direction that hasn't changed in that I'm old enough to have been around to remember what happened when the old AFL took the likes of Joe Namath away from the NFL. Mm-hmm. What happened? They merged. I'm old enough to have been there as a, maybe, I guess, a high schooler or freshman in college when the ABA, no, I was in high school, when the ABA took away Julius Erving and David Thompson and Dan Issel and George McGinnis.
And Moses.
And Moses. Oh, my God. And Moses took them away. And what happened? A merger.
Yeah.
Every time this has happened, there's been a merger. I understand that the stakes are not any different. They're not. Each side will say the stakes are different. They're not. And so one side may have the upper hand today and not tomorrow. I remember him getting just eviscerated when Phil Mickelson said some of the things he said publicly. Phil's right about, if not 100% of it, about 90%. About what it is the tour needed to do and what might happen if they didn't. He got it right. The people can resent Phil if they want. He got it right.
He did.
And right now, the PGA seems to have the upper hand today. But I'm going to tell you something. As a person who just appreciates competition, I get that Scottie Scheffler's great. At any time, anywhere, Scottie Scheffler's great. Don't tell me he's better than the best of John Rahm. I don't know that. I don't know that. And I'm sorry. The sport, the game suffers by me as a consumer not being able to decide that for myself or based or letting them decide, right?
Yeah.
So I don't tell me that. I don't know. Koepka's got such a interesting graph of, you know, major tournament play versus everything else that I don't know what we can look at Brooks and decide. But Bryson, like I don't want to see Bryson every week. Don't tell me, you know, my dear friend and colleague Tony Kornheiser disagrees with me and says, oh, they face off in the majors. So what? I want to see it every week. The essence of sport is every damn week.
Yes.
And you're not going to tell me that Bryson is not going to be in there with John Rahm taking some of those trophies away from Scottie Scheffler, who ain't going to have seven straight or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He's not. And again, no, that's no slight at Scottie. It's just this is the way, you know, sport is at its best. And so is there a merger coming? I don't know. I don't know enough about the business of it. I have a dear friend who played golf in North Carolina and is one of my golf mentors. His name is Robbie Petty. And Robbie, who's, you know, an Arizona guy now, we play quite a bit of golf together. He puts up with me because he's probably still at a plus two. We talk about this and whether or not what's going to happen. What's going to happen to get these sides together? I don't know.
Yeah.
There are variables that can't be predicted. There are conditions which can't be anticipated. people didn't want to properly anticipate the conditions that Phil Mickelson foresaw accurately. But they did. And so all that money came flowing into the PGA from what? Just because? Out of the kindness of somebody's heart? Bullshit. It didn't. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I just want to see everybody playing together, just like I want to see Joe Namath play against, you know, the Bears and the Vikings and the Packers and not just the Chiefs and the Bills and the Patriots. I wanted to see that, and we ultimately got it. You know, we ultimately got that in, I didn't mention hockey. And it was not good when Bobby Hull wandered off from the Blackhawks to Winnipeg. It's never good for the game.
Yeah.
It's good for the pockets of the guys.
Of a few.
And I don't blame them. And if I was on the Live Tour and they told me I had to give back money, kiss my ass, I'm giving back money. You guys got more money because of the leverage Live provided you. And I'd stand there and say that to somebody else I root for all the time is Rory. And I'd love to. I don't know. I don't have the kind of relationship with Rory to talk about this or debate this. But, it's like, come on now. I mean, nobody really wants to press these guys and say these events are now worth this because of what? Because they weren't. But, you know, that pressure is going to come to bear at some point if the consumer is not as satisfied with the product as he or she should be or feels they ought to be.
And Michael Wilbon, there's also a fair amount of unknown right now as it relates to Brian Rolapp, who's taken over as the CEO of the PGA Tour, NFL executive for a long time. He's engaged very closely with Tiger in sort of framing what's going to be the look of the PGA Tour starting in 2027. Will you have a Hawaii swing? Will, as Rolapp is, you know, he's not really insinuating. He's kind of flat out said, look, we can't compete against the NFL. Does that mean that the PGA Tour starting in 27 or 28 doesn't start until after the week of the Super Bowl? And Mike, that's a very, very different look from what we've been accustomed to following from Hawaii to the West Coast swing to Arizona to Florida. Man, if you don't even start it until the second week in February, it's a whole paradigm shift to the PGA Tour.
They could start during the bye week. I mean, the NFL is always going to have that.
Yeah, it's good. Good point. Yeah,
so that would enable them to start 2 weeks earlier. I hear you, but Brian knows, he understands, he sees the numbers, and he's not going to shy away from them. The numbers, those numbers are, that's hard data.
Yeah,
who's paying attention? How many eyeballs do you have? As a person who watches, I can't wait for Sony tonight. Today, I'm going to go. I can't wait. I need golf fix. I'm going to start trembling here in a minute, and. He understands that. So what can you do around it? What can golf do around? See, I think there's some places that the tour could take advantage of a lull, not an absence of football, but a little lull. Maybe there's some midweek things that can happen once we get out of the regular season and you don't have the Thursday games and you're blank from, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then you go back into Saturday NFL. Maybe, I haven't studied as closely as they have. But I just think that Tiger Woods, people have no idea what a sports fanatic Tiger is. All of it. How he understands it. How he understands how it's consumed, what the competition is, what the economies are. And Tiger gets every bit of it. And so the fact that he's heavily involved in trying to figure out how golf can maximize its own exposures and minimize its vulnerabilities is just smart.
You mentioned about wanting to go and check out that opening round of Sony. So we've got just a couple more questions, and then we're going to let you go so you can enjoy the 85 degrees or 80 degrees of the out there in Hawaii. You mentioned earlier that you've edited two books for Charles Barkley. Can you talk a little bit, please, about Mike, how he overhauled that swing that was really kind of frightening to look at? And it appe- it appears to be a much more, at least, sustainable golf swing.
Yeah, but it's simple. Charles will tell you, he took lessons from every celebrity teacher in the world for a few years, and he got what you think if you take a lesson from every single celebrity teacher for years. He got that. He got whatever that was.
Yeah.
And then when he didn't, and he started taking lessons and from teachers that he should be taking lessons from. And, you know, Charles lives in, I know where Charles lives. He has access to incredible golf and incredible golf instruction. And he just started doing that. That's it. And he's a great athlete. People forget Charles is such a comedian. He's such a showman. He's such an entertainer that people forget Charles Barkley is in our consciousness because he's a great athlete. Because at 290 pounds, Charles could go off 1 foot and flush it behind his head at 6'4". Charles Barkley, great athlete. He's great. He's got great hand-eye. And so he went away from all that other stuff to taking it seriously. And now, you know, Charles is, I don't know what Charles is. I'm going to say this for handicap purposes, betting purposes. Charles has got to be down to about a 10 or 10, 10-ish now.
What are you, by the way?
I'm not playing a lot. I've had to have some foot surgeries that have gotten in the way of my golf life, real life intruding, and a teenage son who at one point is saying, "Dad, I don't love golf. I just like it. I just come out here with you, and I don't love it." And then all of a sudden, he's playing more, and then he's 6'3" and a half with a Gumby-ish body and flexibility, and he's you know hitting 3-wood consistently at 270, and I'm like, what happened here? I was driving him to his damn basketball games,
yeah,
and taking him to the range to get lessons, including from Bob Dolan. Now this kid is killing me, and so the moment I can get him out of high school this summer, I'm going back to obsession. I'm never going to get to be, you know, my favorite round of my life was I three-putted back-to-back days at Augusta to shoot 90 and 91, which still kill me. You can tell I'm not over it. And I played as well as I could play otherwise those 2 days. And I'm never going to get back to that. But I just want to get back to being able to, you know, I'm not going to be invited to play at Tiger's, you know, pro-ams anymore or any of that stuff. But I want to be able to just go and not be embarrassing. I don't know that I can take $11 off president number 44 anymore. Probably not. He'd be laughing at that. But if I could beat Tony out of some money, that would feel good.
Yeah, speaking of, and you mentioned Bob Dolan, the outstanding PGA professional, a long time at Columbia Country Club outside of Washington, D.C., where both you and Tony are members. Yes. How often do you play with Mr. Kornheiser? And what is it like to play with Tony Kornheiser on a golf course?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of trash talking. Yeah. There's a lot of funny stuff said that we cannot repeat for family consumption. It's great. It's great. Tony's one of the people who got me into golf.
Yeah.
I was his guest at Columbia. And then he was one of my sponsors, at Columbia. And, it's great. It's just a great community, a great place to grow up playing. I'm so glad that my son has grown up playing there and now calls me from the 6th fairway where he shouldn't have a cell phone. It says, "Dad, I'm hitting it past where you hit it with a 5-wood. So it brings me great joy that is happening. And Bob Dolan is an incredible part of that, as you know.
Yeah.
In this community, the Bethesda, Chevy Chase, Potomac community in Maryland. And I love it here. You know, there have been people here who are very important, you know, to the game. And I don't lose sight of that as I... Yes, I live in Chicago and Scottsdale and love playing in the places I mentioned. But you know, those things are really important to my own development. I don't know that I even understand or would be as deeply entrenched as I am without Columbia.
Well, that's terrific. Mike Wilbon, two final questions, and then we will let you go to watch the Sony Open. Mike, kind of on a broad way, we talked a lot about golf. I'm wondering, as you look back now, having, you know, golf been part of your life now for what, 20, 30 years, roughly?
30 years, yeah.
What is the game and the people involved? What does it mean? What's it meant to your life and in your life on a regular basis, Mike?
Well, I tell people, so I played tennis growing up. I played tennis in high school. It's a pretty decent tennis player, that's all. Played in high school. And then I played, you know, as an adult in leagues and rec leagues and, you know, tennis didn't change my life. Golf changes your life. It changes your friendships. Doesn't mean that doesn't mean social climbing. It doesn't mean that. It could be just dudes you're out playing, you know, for, you know, skins games on the weekend who are at whatever club or not club, whatever golf course you might play. Golf changes your life. Changed my address. It changed everything. It changed it changed my level of patience as a father. I had no patience. I had to develop some. It changed professionally what I was able to cover. I expanded my own horizons about sports. And again, the associations, the people that I play golf with. People have no idea how. People who think golf is not cool because they think that is a certain stage and they think it's not athletic, it's not really a sport. They have no idea how addicted and obsessed you do, of course.
Yeah.
The greatest athletes in the world are with golf. They have no people generally speaking who don't play don't understand that, don't know that. And I sort of moved into that space myself, and it changed my life. And I hope I got another, I don't know. I tell my son, I hope I have another 10 years. And I tell him I might have another year or two to beat him, which is, I'm telling myself a lie. But it changed my life. That would bring a frown from somebody I am related to by marriage. I'll tell you this quick story to end.
Please.
So I was dating this young woman who said to me one day after about 10 dates in, it's clear something is probably going to happen here. And she says, we need to have dinner. I need to ask you about something. Okay. So we have dinner and dinner goes for a while. I go, what is so important you needed to have dinner tonight and ask about? She goes, I have to ask you a question. Do you play golf? And I said, no, I've never touched a golf club in my life. Now, at this time, I'm 35, and it was the truth. So I said, but given where the game is going, given what I do for a living, I'm now a columnist at the Washington Post, given this Eldrick Woods kid, given all of this, I got to play. I got to, you know, so. And I said, by the way, why do you care? And she said, because I don't want to get seriously involved with my father, who's a dentist, who took every Wednesday off and every Sunday and played golf until they dragged him in off the course. And she said, I don't want my life to be my mother's life. I don't want that. And I said, you won't have that. I won't play like that. I'm not going to join a club, a private club.
Not that guy, right?
I'm not going to have several sets of golf clubs purchased. I'm not going to take vacations out of the country to play. No, I'm never going to do that. Well, so that was a lie, all of it. And I took, so the day before the wedding, I go across the street. There's a little place, Fairfax Driving Range. If it was Fairfax something club. I go there in Fairfax, Virginia, and I say to the assistant pro, I said, hey, when I get back from my wedding honeymoon next week, I want to take my first lessons. And he says, that's great. I do that. PJ Preedom. And I said, he said, what are you doing today? And I said, nothing. I'm getting married tomorrow and I want to take lessons. He goes, what are you doing today, right now? I said, I'm standing in front of you. And he says, here, this is an 8-iron. And we go out in April in the cold. And I take my first lesson the day before the wedding, getting married to this person whose last and most important instructions were, I don't want to do this. So now she inherits, and now she's got to drive. You know, my son isn't old enough to drive the car to certain clubs where you got to be 18 or 21. So she's got to go drive him. So the curse lives. It's been passed on. It's what she deserved.
Great story. Final question is one that I ask as we close all of our interviews. And the response, by the way, that I had from Scott Van Pelt, your ESPN colleague, yep, when he was on, was very emotional. And it's very simple, Mike. Who would round out a dream foursome for you? Who would be three individuals, living or deceased, with whom you would play a really cool round of golf, and where would you go play?
See, you know what? My answer is not going to be as good as Scott's, or a lot of people. One, this sounds obnoxious. I've gotten to play with just about everybody I want to play with.
Yeah,
and I'm proud of it. It's not to brag, though. It damn sure sounds like it. I mean, I played a lot of rounds of golf with President Obama.
Yeah,
and now mutual friends of ours that might be included in that. Played with Charles. I don't want to play with pros because that's no fun for them. I don't burn to do that. I don't. I'm sure I played a round or two with Mel Reed. No, that can't be any fun for them. Like, what fun could that be? And so even though they have to lie and say, oh yeah, we had a great time. No, they didn't. They didn't have a great time doing that. So my foursome would be, I don't know. I can't just name like hot actresses. That doesn't come off well. Who play? I don't even know if they play. Like, does Rosalind Sanchez play golf? I don't know. I don't know who the foursome would be. Even if it was other athletes, right? I've played with in tournaments. The prettiest swing I've ever seen belongs not to a golfer, belongs to Ken Griffey Jr. Yes, that guy, Ken Griffey Jr. The prettiest golf swing I've ever seen. So I played with all these guys. I'm really, 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 really lucky to do that. And so I don't have a, now if there's a where, yeah. I mean, the where I get to play at Scottsdale National, which people don't know. People don't know unless they play there. But I Augusta, Pebble, Torrey, they're predictable, right? I've walked the old course. I've never played it. Walked it a couple of times. The old course, soon, before I'm too damn old to appreciate it, right? In the United States, I don't even know if there's any place, but played in Scotland, played in Ireland. I'm lucky. I my life carries me to places where I get to do that. And so maybe my son and President Obama, that's a threesome. Now I got to come up with a fourth. I got to come up with a fourth person. I don't even know who the fourth person would be. I'll leave that to the imagination. Maybe my own imagination. I'll text you and tell you who the fourth person would be, but there's three of them.
Well, weeks ago, we had Brian Mitchell on, the great punt and kickoff returner. And the first person he said was not a golfer, was Muhammad Ali.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize dead or alive. And Muhammad, like, I don't think Muhammad played golf. There's so many, like we talked about athletes who play. I played with Steph Curry. Although, so I can't really say Steph, and because I played with him and it's played more with his dad, with Dill. And so, yes, all those guys are such avid, engaging people on a golf course with Joe Theismann. I'm trying to think of other professional. I played with Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald played, what? Came and he walked the course with his dad and me. I grew up with his dad in Chicago, in Arizona. And we said, why don't you take out a putter? This is 20, years ago. Take out a putter, like hold a club. No, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to play golf. What? So now, of course, I make fun of him every chance I get.
Of course.
Because Larry is the player that he is and the engaging, generous player that he is. And so that's what I mean by golf changes people's lives. Larry Fitzgerald and I grew up where it wasn't on the menu, but it changed our lives. Not a coincidence.
Golf's been very, very good to you. You've been lucky to have had it and will continue to do so, Mike Wilbon. And we have been so fortunate to have you as our guest on Musings on Golf. Hey, Mike, this has just been fabulous. Appreciate you so much for your time and your ongoing passion.
Thanks for having me.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Well, again, a big thanks to Michael Wilbon. And Mike, your Chicago Bears are going to be back for the 2026 season. There's a lot of positives to look forward to. Okay, Chris Goddard. Wow, what a story. Goddard wins his third PGA Tour event in three seasons. And just the fascinating little story in regards to the Sony Open, which he captured on Sunday. Goddard flew to Honolulu for an orientation class in 2024 when he was a PGA Tour rookie, but he failed to get into the field that week. So he just sat in 8 hours in a classroom, listened to lectures and so forth, but didn't play. Then last year he played, missed the cut. His ranking at that point, missing the cut, was 195th in the world. Had some great stellar play in the back half of 2025. And now with his win on Sunday, he is the 17th ranked player in the world. And that happened in large part, you know, he shot 64 on Sunday at Wailea. And look, this guy's long off the tee. He averaged 320 yards, but he's really, really good around the greens. Key putts on 12, 13, and 17 for birdies that sealed the victory. So let's hear from Chris Goddard on his win at the Sony Open.
Yeah, having a win or two under your belt always helps coming down the stretch, knowing that you've done it and that you're able to execute under pressure. And I felt like I did a great job of that today. And yeah, I mean, it's more of the, you know, a lot of these tournaments, you just kind of got to hang around as long as you can, hang in the fight. And I felt like I did a great job of that this week. And then, you know, when I got momentum, I kept it and I didn't squander it at any point today.
It was not only a great victory for Chris Goddard, but it was a huge win for Bridgestone Golf. And the reason for that is Goddard played a prototype golf ball that's actually going to be introduced this week at the PGA show in Orlando. It's called the Bridgestone VS Black, and it's part of their Tour B series. Velo Surge is the marketing term that they're using around that ball, and higher speeds, greater distance, therefore more spin, exactly the type of ball that a player of the ilk that Chris Goderup is, that will have great success with. So Goderup not in the field, by the way, this week at the American Express, but Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, is making his debut on the PGA Tour this year as the tour heads to the mainland. Okay, the other big winner at the Sony Open clearly was Vijay Singh. I mean, for goodness sakes, Vijay Singh, by being eighth all-time in on the PGA Tour money list, he was allowed and took a one-year exemption to play this year, not in the signature events on the PGA Tour, but I guess you could say the regular events such as the Sony. And we talked about this last week with Mark Calcavecchia, who took that same exemption when he was 52 or 53. And all Vijay Singh did was he tied for 40th, made the cut at the Sony Open. And by doing so, Vijay Singh has now made the cut in four consecutive decades on the PGA Tour. Keep something else in mind. And I did a little research here. Vijay Singh has won more PGA Tour events than any other non-American. He's won 34 times on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy's won 29 times. Gary Player won 24 times. It's the work ethic. It's just the great passion that this guy has for the game, that age is simply a number with him. And it also gets him paired very nicely for the start of the PGA Tour Champions schedule this week at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship in Hawaii. So Vijay will play, you know, he'll spot in a PGA Tour event here or there, but expect more of what happened there. Make some cuts, maybe not necessarily threaten, but at age 62, here's a big salute to Vijay Singh. So I'm really happy that the news of Nick Faldo back home in Montana, the six-time major champion, had a scheduled preventative open heart surgery. He was at to repair an enlarged aorta at the Cleveland Clinic. He was there for 2 weeks. He and his wife, and everything went well. He is now, as I said, back home in Bozeman, Montana, continuing. He'll continue his course design work very soon. And Sir Nick will look ahead to the 30th anniversary of his incredible coming from six shots back to beat Greg Norman at the Masters in 1996. I know he will not want to miss that as he celebrates that that significant anniversary. And looking ahead to next week, the name Manning is certainly one that all of us know when it comes to sports, whether it's Eli or Peyton. Well, the oldest of the Manning brothers is Cooper Manning. He also happens to be the father of Arch Manning, the quarterback at the University of Texas. And Cooper Manning, who's a big-time golfer, will be joining us next week. We'll have a lot of talk about golf, about, I'm sure, a lot of trash talk with the Manning brothers and Father Archie on the golf course, and also what he feels like Arch has in store for the future at Texas and beyond. Again, great being with Michael Wilbon. This was a lot of fun today. Hope you enjoyed it. Kelly Elbin for Janice Self signing off on Musings on Golf.